Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Now Spinning. With me today, I have...
Andy.
Leo.
And Jacob.
And I am Simon, as I was last time. Today, we're going to be talking about a pretty broad topic, but I think we have some pretty good ideas for it. We're going to be talking about our favorite, or not our favorite, just cover songs we think are interesting.
Good for fixing that real
good,
quick. That's
good. Discussion. And I think that we've got some good ones to start off with. Let's go ahead, Jacob. Let's see what we got.
So I'm going to start with a band probably nobody's ever heard of because they aren't famous, which is a shame because they should be. Cabaret Boreal. Mm. I went and saw their live show at the Robin Theater here in Lansing on Thursday. If you don't know about the Robin Theater, it's in Rio Town. It's small little theater. They do shows. Their season just ended, but they're going to start up shows again in the fall. Check it out. It's great, especially if you're looking for like folk or less, you know, mainstream music. I've also seen Lansing Symphony Orchestra events there. They're very cool. But yeah, Cabaret Boreal is a like jazz, like 1920s inspired group. It's primarily accordion, tuba, and like banjo guitar with a singer. So like a very weird instrumentation. And they played a lot of covers. They played some original songs too, but their covers blew me away. And I learned a few things. So Alabama Song, made famous by The Doors, not by The Doors.
No, really?
That is a 1920s song that came out of like the German cabaret movement.
Yeah.
I don't remember who it's actually written by, but it's like the Bertolt Brecht group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was like The Doors version's cool. It's got fun, jangly sounds. They did it in what I'm assuming is a much more classic style, how it probably would have sounded. And I was like, this is so right. It felt very cabaret. It felt very like seedy, but in like a fun, you know, kind of sexy way. And I was like, oh, this is brilliant. And I had never known. I always thought that was like a Jim Morrison original.
Yeah.
And I feel like such a fool now. But, you know, and there's nothing wrong with not knowing something. But yeah, you can find some Cabaret Boreal on like YouTube and stuff. You can probably find them doing a cover of this song. Go listen to it. It's pretty cool. They also did a cover of a song that I do know the original of, and that's White Rabbit, Jefferson Airplane. They did it in a very folky style, a bit less psychedelic style. They introduced it with like a Greek folk song that then flowed into it.
Ooh, that's
and it
cool.
It was just such a cool way of doing it. And it really highlights like part of the discussion we're going to have about covers of like, do you add something to the original? Do you just try and like make it the same? Or do you like try and like change the genre? Do you try and change the feel? And this was one where like it was technically very similar to the original in tone and style and stuff, but they changed just enough that it was just so exciting to hear. It made the lyrics feel so much heavier, and I really loved it. So yeah, check out the Robin Theater, check out Cabaret Boreal, and yeah, covers, dude. So Leo, I know what he's about to bring up.
I want to save it.
I don't. I've got something to talk about right now. So a song, when you said we decided on covers, the first thing my mind immediately jumped to is a song that's been covered by a lot of artists over time, but I wanted to highlight three specific versions of it, which the song is Wild as the Wind, which is a theme song. It's a song from the 50s from a movie, but I was made familiar with this song by the David Bowie album Station to Station, but that song is a cover of Nina Simone's song, which in itself is a cover of the original Johnny Mathis version. And that version, starting out, it's very like lush orchestral. Like it's a 50s pop song. It's what you expect there. It's like a ballad. It's very good. He's a great singer. He's had a really good rendition of it. what really got my interest is, like, you listen to the how Nina Simone takes that same song and she interprets it, like, differently. Strips away all of, like, the frills, the orchestra, the, like, deep product, like, the crazy production. It's just her, you know, a piano,
so
drums,
dark.
Bass.
It sounds so
yes, she does.
Dark. I had never heard this before. I wasn't even really familiar with the David Bowie version. I know a decent bit of Bowie. We've talked about this before where I kind of got into Bowie a lot later. And yeah, I'd never heard this Nina Simone version either, obviously. And I was just like, oh baby, that is like
she's
haunting, but in like the coolest way possible.
No, she's a incredible vocalist. Like if you haven't listened to Nina Simone, stop what you're doing right now. Listen to it right now. She is very great. She had like, it's a, there's like so much like yearning in the song. You know what I mean? Like it's just someone who's like just absolute, just desire for somebody else. It's just crazy to listen to. And she puts her whole heart into the song. Like she does any song she does, obviously. Like most of her stuff, well, like a lot of her most famous songs are all covers, but every single one, she always takes it and she reinterprets it in her own style and like absolutely makes it her own. And like that's very true for Wild as the Wind. Absolutely haunting, devastating song. The original's sad, but this one's just like, it blew me away when I heard it the first time. Just go working backwards from Bowie.
Well, and Bowie's not really like that.
No, well,
yeah, I listened to that one, you know, after
the first,
and I was like, what? Like, I mean, this is cool, but like, okay.
Yeah, that whole era of, and like the Bowie version of it is 10 years after the Nina Simone version in 1976 with the album Station to Station. And if you're familiar with that album, that was at a very like low point in David Bowie's life. Incredible album, 10 out of 10 album, but like he was going through it at the time. He takes it and he kind of turns it into like a funk song, almost a disco song at times. But like, it's just like the way he sings it in the context of the, it's at the very end of the album. And Station to Station is like a, it's really just him, like I said, a very dark point in his life, like drug addiction, living off of peppers and milk and like incredible paranoia in New, like Los Angeles. And like, you can definitely hear it in the music, like, and his voice in that song. Like he sounds like on the album very robotic, but like at the same time, even if he's like, it sounds like so like artificial, he's still, I don't know, there's
it's,
like,
it's haunting in a different way.
Exactly.
This like is it's more like genuinely chilling.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Nina Simone is kind of like pretty haunting. Yeah. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
This is more like, ooh, ooh, that sounds. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Nina Simone, weirdly enough, especially considering the period David Bowie was in, Nina Simone and Bowie were like buddy-buddy.
Oh, they were friends,
they were like really, really close.
That's why he did the song, is because he was like a giant, really appreciated Nina Simone, which anybody who's like big into music, like you gotta appreciate Nina Simone. I feel like that's like a requirement, but anyway. But that Bowie, definitely huge fan, so he took it on himself to cover it, and I like his version. It's like I said, different vibe than Nina Simone's, obviously, but like still, it's just chilling to hear it, you know what I mean? It's like, I think it's one of those songs that like, anybody makes their interpretation of it, it's still got like that underlying, like, you know, like sadness to it, like just haunting feel to it. I quite like it. It's very good.
I feel like Nina Simone is one of those artists where when she covers the song, it isn't really your song anymore.
Nope.
Like she covered Isn't It a Pity for this live album called Emergency Ward. And at least I think it's on Emergency Ward. But she covered Isn't It a Pity, and it's this like super long version of the song where she draws it out and lets the piano ring through the concert hall. And it's like, it's a completely different song to George Harrison's original. Like she has this ability to just transform everything she touches and create it into an entirely new song with very little going on in terms of the arrangement.
And I think that's a huge part of what makes a cover great. Kind of like I was saying earlier, where like, when you add something to it and you make it new and you make it exciting, you know what I mean? Like, we all love old songs and like we can hear somebody playing it and make it sound like the old song, and that's cool too. But like when you really change it and we get that like human emotion from it, we are like, oh no, they're putting some of themselves into this and they're making this their style. Like I think that's very cool.
Very good. But yeah, Nina Simone, check her out. Wild as the Wind, great song. But
David Bowie, if you haven't heard of him, also
David Bowie's pretty good.
I think he's pretty nice. He's pretty cool.
It's kind of niche.
I'd check him out.
Yeah.
He was
he was a cool musician. He wasn't the nicest gnome. Guy in his life.
He made the laughing gnome.
He had a weird, weird life.
There are many phases of Bowie.
Yeah, I don't think
I actually like have an actual like picture of what he actually looks like.
He looks different in every picture of him anyway.
Yes, literally. He's kind of got the Freddie Mercury problem of like every year he changed his style.
At least Freddie Mercury has like two images of himself.
I think you got to do more deep dive
look up,
into Freddie
look up
Mercury.
David Bowie.
He did some different things.
Anyway, David Bowie's
Bowie's
worse. Bowie,
Bowie like, is way worse Mercury. Though. He changed his look all the time. Anyway.
So we got to talk about Hound Dog for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh boy.
If you're not aware, Elvis Presley is not the original person to do that.
No, he was not.
The original artist who actually made it big was a black artist by the name of Big Mama Thornton. And I believe she topped out the black chart. Yeah, they were the difference there for a while.
They literally recorded them differently.
Yes. And then Elvis basically got wind of it, took it up to the white charts. And that's the one that's now the most famous. And so, I mean, the artist, not the artist. Fault who history remembers and who history forgets. It also the artist does not control what song becomes famous. But at the end of the day, Mama Thornton did not really profit off of her own song.
And I did some cursory research when you said that you're going to be talking about this today. It wasn't even just Elvis who did it, because I mean she didn't actually write the song either. She was approached by two songwriters who wanted her to sing the song.
Lieber and Stoller, very big songwriting partnership.
They were like, hey, you would fit this song perfectly. You should sing it. And then she like transformed it vocally.
Absolutely.
She like made it her own thing, and she tried to get songwriting credits because of like how transformative and important her performance is on the song. Sort of like a similar example is the song Great Gig in the Sky. The vocalist on that song, I can't quite remember her name, but like her voice is the composition in Great Gig in the Sky. Like you remember the slide guitar, but it's the voice. That's the song. And Big Mama Thornton was kind of screwed out of the songwriting credits for that song. Granted, it was a big hit. Like I don't think Big Mama Thornton was unknown at the time. I mean, she was, like really big on the R&B charts. But, you know, it was covered by various other white artists. And then Elvis actually covered a Elvis covered a white version of her song. So it was an Elvisified white version of the song that then topped the charts.
That's a lot of those like R&B songs back in the day. That was what they like had to do to get them onto like the radio, was like you take the original and then have like a friendly white person sing it and it would blow up. On those charts, but
which is so funny because like we get this image of history of like there was this panic of like Elvis and rock music and like his suggestive dancing and whatever, and like no, he was still pretty mainstream, like people still accepted him way before they would accept a black artist, which is just like brutal, you know.
Absolutely.
You're like, oh man, racism sucks. you know, but it's fascinating that like it takes somebody like Elvis, who was still disliked, but still managed to like push it into the mainstream.
Definitely, and like I think that's also another thing to notice about like note about covers is like it's interesting to see it. Like I said, like how it takes on a life, like it just gets taken. I'm not saying like it takes on a life of its own. Like sometimes it's like taken away and then like you know remade by someone else. It's just there's a lot of nuance to it. You know what I mean?
And
fascinating
I
stuff.
I do think Elvis, and I don't want to defend Elvis because. It's Elvis, you know. I don't want to like straight up defend him, but like compared to a lot of his contemporaries, he was always willing to give credit like to the black artists that he took inspiration from. He was always like shouting out his inspirations and like where he got the songs from and everything, far more than his contemporaries. And even still, it's like, I don't know, they're not making any money off this. Like publicity helps, but like they do need pay for their house and whatnot.
Yeah, you can't pay someone an exposure. That's not not really a thing.
And even if the, like, you know, the songwriting credits not being given to them isn't, you know, necessarily Elvis's fault.
No.
It's just, it's an unfortunate, I'm so, so glad that we are past the era, well, maybe not fully past.
Yeah, I think artist rights is still a pretty front of the industry issue that like
Taylor's version.
Nobody's really figured out
that kind of stuff
in like a super clean way. But that's like money is just the ultimate like dehumanizer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a brutal thing, and that's just part of what we got to do if we're gonna support artists in that way. You know, we gotta kind of figure it out and do our best.
Absolutely.
Then taking it back even further. We gotta talk about Irving Berlin. You may not know his name, but you definitely know his songs. Yep. He's responsible for White Christmas, Dancing Cheek to Cheek, like tons of stuff.
Isn't he? He's like God Bless America or one of those.
It also helps that all of his songs were in big movies. Yeah. He was all over Hollywood. All of his famous songs come from movies and musicals, but like many of the most famous lyric songs are his. There's also George Gershwin, who you may know from Rhapsody in Blue.
Friend of the show.
Mm-hmm. He is also, like Irving Berlin, an architect of the jazz era. He wrote I Got Rhythm. He wrote, I got a list here.
American in Paris.
Rhapsody in Blue, that's the big one. That's the one I immediately think of when I hear Gershwin. It's Rhapsody in Blue.
Sawney. What is that?
Summertime.
Sawney. One of those.
Yeah. The song Summertime. That got covered by a lot of
artists. Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, made famous by Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of stuff. I also just discovered that Herbie Hancock covered Rhapsody in Blue.
Wow.
I have not listened to it yet, but knowing Herbie Hancock, that would be really good to listen to.
It would be probably a little weird.
Probably a little weird, but
that's kind of what you expect with Herbie.
Speaking of Gershwin, bringing it back to Nina from earlier, one of her biggest early songs was from Gershwin's, I believe he's the one who made Porgy and Bess, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. One of her biggest early songs was I Love You, Porgy. And that has just like been a staple of hers for years and years. Another reason... Combine the new discoveries. Go check out both of them. Pretty please.
Leo, you were wanting some.
Oh, boy.
Something.
Here we go.
Oh, goody. So I, you know, got the boss call. I was told, you know, we're going to be talking about covers today. I asked, do they have to be good necessarily? Because I, you know, I just like I haven't been listening to any.
Here we go.
I haven't been listening to a lot of older music. So like the cover. I'm not well versed in the cover game right now. It's not in my wheelhouse right now. So I couldn't think of anything except for Michael Jackson's cover of Come Together from his film Moonwalker.
Oh boy.
And we're going to have an interesting chit chat about this.
Okay.
Because I want to compare this version to a version you brought to my attention. Version by the band Aerosmith, who friends of the show may or may not know. And I want to hear your thoughts.
Aerosmith's no friends of mine. That's mean. That's not fair. But no.
I wouldn't consider. We got to be polite. You know,
You're right.
Say sorry to Aerosmith.
Hugely influential. They've got good songs. I like Sweet Emotion. I hate their cover of Come Together.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's pretty bad.
The thing is like, it's difficult to talk about these because while Aerosmith's cover, like musically, is so much worse, there's something about. The history of Michael Jackson covering that song is just the meanest, most bitter, like, it's just rude.
Can you give us three-sentence rundown?
It'll be more than three sentences.
Oh, dear.
So, basically, when Michael Jackson was, like, first growing up and getting into the music industry around the time of Off the Wall, him and Paul McCartney of Beatles fame were buddy-buddy.
Maybe we should mention, are the original artist behind Come Together. I don't know if we've actually said that.
Yeah, no, they made Come Together.
I don't know if you guys have heard it. It's one of the biggest rock songs of all time.
It's on that album with some dudes walking across the street on it. Anyway.
it's the opening. It's, like, it's a statement for the band.
Yeah.
You know, they were buddy-buddy in, like, late 70s, early 80s.
Thriller Michael Jackson has a duet.
The Doggone Girl is Mine.
Yeah, Girl is Mine. He covered Girlfriend. I think that's a Paul song. Yeah. So they were like, you know, they were buddy-buddy, and Michael Jackson was like, how do I get my money up? And so Paul McCartney was like, you know, you just got to get into music publishing. That's what I did, and that's what helped me get my money up. That's what helped me out in the biz. And so Michael Jackson was like, okay, I'm going to buy your catalog. Hee hee.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney was like, funny one, Michael. It was not a joke. He spent millions and millions and millions of dollars buying hundreds of Beatles songs underneath Paul's nose.
The whole catalog, yeah.
So Paul gave him financial advice, and Michael, in return, was like, I'm actually going to take all your money. It's all mine now. And it's
pretty ruthless. It's a ruthless thing to do to your
friend. He covers come together like immediately after. Out.
And immediately after that, once he gets famous off of, once he gets like, well, ultra famous off of Thriller and then Bad, he's like, I'm going to cover this song and I'm going to make all the money on it. And it's going to be a slap in the face to you, Paul McCartney, who tried to help me out and tried to help me get my money up. And when you listen to it, there's just like this smarminess to it. And like, it's just like, it's like, dude, you suck.
It's got
like,
you are the worst
guy. I just listened to a recording of it. It's so edgy. Like, you know, Michael
Jackson.
Bad
well,
and the Bad era is just so,
it's very over the top. It's very over the top.
It's like, it's so gauche and like over the top and gaudy. Cause he's like, look at me. I'm Michael Jackson. I'm the biggest star in the world. And it's like, I guess. Yeah, you are. But like, do you have to be this annoying about it?
But to pull it back to the covers discussion, it is, like we were talking about earlier, I was saying earlier too, he put himself into that song. Yeah. And that's where I think it comes across as stronger than the Aerosmith one, in that like the Aerosmith one sounds so similar to the Beatles one, except with Steven Tyler singing.
Oh, God.
And you're just like, oh, why did you even bother? Like, the guitar solo's not as good, but the bass just sounds the same, and you're just like, oh, I don't know. I had never heard the Michael Jackson version before somehow, and I was like, yeah, this isn't great. I'm never going to listen to this again, probably, but I at least went like, he's putting some of his own thing into it. There's still, like, the groove, but it's not just him doing a rip for rip, you know, bit off the original.
I guess, but I mean, I think for me is I hate covers of Come Together.
Yeah.
I hate them. Because no one can do it right.
The original version's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's like the greatest groove, the best song ever. Let me sneak this in here even. The intro to this podcast.
The intro
to this podcast. If you didn't know, I wrote the intro to this podcast. I recorded it in my basement. It's bad. But we accept it. We enjoy it. We like it. There's a bass slide near the end of like the bass riff that is like directly inspired by Come Together. That's like how important Come Together is to me and like to this podcast. Like, we all love the Beatles. We've talked about the Beatles loads in the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
And that's like, it's such a cool song. It's such a cool riff. The guitar parts that only come up in parts are very cool. The like way the vocals are done are so cool. And it's one of those things where, like we were saying earlier, you got to put your own thing into the song and make it new and whatever. And that's like, if you're going to do a cover of the song, you got to make it new and your own thing because the original's so perfect. Like, you're not going to improve on that without really trying hard.
The thing that makes the original work, though, and this is like, you know, you're like musically inclined, the arrangements are never right. And I mean it like everybody plays it as loud and cantankerously as possible. It's a, like, it starts off quiet and explodes. And that's like the point of the song, is it's this like kind of like, you know, kind of anxious intro with like the tom fills and everything's very sparse, and then it explodes with George Harrison's
guitar.
Shout
out Ringo.
Shout out Ringo. Like, that's one of like
the best
drum parts.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, period. And it's all about the slow burn until it explodes. And every single cover of that song, they come in guns blazing, and it kills the vibe. It kills the song.
There's like, no crescendo. There's nothing.
Like, there's no dynamics any of the covers because they just want to make it a straight up rocker. The Beatles, like, I know they're the most famous rock band. I don't know. They have a lot of like, they have a lot more subtlety with their dynamics than most other rock bands that preceded them do.
It shocked. The Beatles had some skill as songwriters.
I know. I know. Hot take.
This is the first I've heard
of
it.
But like, it would it kill Aerosmith to just be a little quieter?
What do you think you're talking to right now? Who do you think you're talking to?
And Michael as well. Well, it would kill him to just tone it down a little bit.
In the bad era.
I don't even want to. The bad era makes me so upset. Like, it's like.
Could be dangerous, though.
I prefer dangerous.
I
prefer dangerous because at least he's trying something new.
He really is.
He's trying something. Like, it has Remember the Time. Bad has, okay, thank you. I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that.
Check out the Michael Jackson cover of Come Together and tell us if you think it's bad or not.
Or you couldn't, and you'd take my word for it.
Take Leo's word for it. Or don't. I don't know. Anyway,
We're gonna come back. We're gonna do another covers episode.
Oh, trust me. Oh my god. But if you do want to hear any cover songs or original songs or covers of covers, all of that kind of stuff will get played at our meetings, which you can check out by checking out the link along with the show on our website. That'll have all of our past playlists, past podcasts, meeting themes, meeting dates, any information you'd ever need to know about the show. You'll all find it there. Anything you know about the podcast, anything about the club itself, check it out. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope to see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Love you so much. Bye-bye.